so, man?
I am doing good this week. Not too much is up. I took apart my pool table and put it back together and took it apart again and put it back together again. So I will say, for all of those of you guys out there that get old pool tables, just be prepared to understand that they've been around for many years and probably many people have had their hands on them. And you will find every manner of screw and bolt and nut and be running around looking for replacements.
Fair enough. How was the frustration level? Did it just get out of hand?
It got pretty high a couple times, you know, so that's why it took a little bit longer to get the project done.
How's the Facebook thing going? You still on it? Or did you cave already?
Well, I'm on my second week.
Yeah.
Today I asked Chandler to let me see Facebook. No, listen. I just scrolled for like 1.5 pages and saw it was the same old characters, the same old shit. So I just gave him the computer back and I'm good.
Nice.
I will say though that I did feel a tiny twinge of an urge, you know, to jump in and say something. But it did feel good not to.
Nice, man. Well, that's an accomplishment.
So I do feel like I'm starting to be a lot more productive from not having that robbery of my time.
Right on. Well, my week was boring. I didn't just work, and more work. It's this kind of time before tax season starts again, you know, before the end of the year. This is a real kind of a drag for me. You know, it's just a bunch of mindless paperwork and data entry and stuff like that for the next couple months before we get towards the end of the year and then wrap things up and start tax season again. But it's kind of a drain. Boring.
Now, do corporations have to report quarterly?
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. Like, they don't have to report their taxes quarterly, but every quarter we do payroll reports and stuff like that for clients. So we do have quarterly stuff that we have to do, but it's pretty smooth mostly.
I meant taxes, to pay taxes quarterly.
Well, so they can do estimated tax payments, and like an individual will do an estimated tax payment. It's actually not every quarter. It's April 18th and then June 18th and then like, I think it's October 18th and then January 18th. And they had that weird April to June. I had heard, and I could be wrong, but I've heard that's actually a carryover from the Vietnam era. They pushed that up because they needed money for the war.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it got off the perfect 3 months.
Kind of interesting to think about all the hidden history of things that we don't know. I used to catch a lot of programs on YouTube and stuff like that that were into that sort of stuff, you know, like going into the nuance and the details of topics like that would show you why something ended up the way it is.
Right. I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started Turtlesmith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.
Why does it sound?
Well, should we just jump into our first segment?
Sure.
It is step 8 of phase 1, and it's financial planning. And this is another one of those steps that people's eyes are going to get blurred and they're not going to pay attention to because it's a very boring step. A lot of math and spreadsheets. You really got to use spreadsheets in this step to make it work. But this gives us all the basically financial portion of our business plan. And then we wrap up our business plan in the next step. So you're going to use kind of a bunch of stuff from the previous steps in order to do this one. So the first thing to do is your startup costs. You got that up? Startup costs. So you should have a good chunk of that from our concept development when you built your training manual, writing all that stuff out step by step. You should kind of know everything. And so we have an example spreadsheet that you'll be able to look at. So just kind of going along, the left is a sort of the startup costs, the business documents at the top, and then fixed assets, insurance, lease utilities, small tools, all that stuff. And basically just everything you need to get things in order.
So when you say startup costs, okay, I want to make sure we're on the same page here. This is like what you would need to have on day one of being open for business, or day one of thinking about opening a business.
So actually when you open your business, so day one of opening your business, you can see down at the bottom left of this spreadsheet, we have total startup capital needed. That's how much money you need to probably be successful in your business. If you don't have at least that much, you're going to be in some trouble.
Now, so the thing that I'm asking about here is just so everyone understands, right? There will be a time between the time when you first started thinking about your business and the time that you're opening the door.
Mm-hmm.
The money that you spend before you open the door, are we including that?
Yeah, that's all in here. So that's
all
in here.
So basically we could call it also the development.
Yeah, it's this is all.
But this is in the planning phase to say, the moment that you open your door, the official start of your business, this is how much money that you had planned on spending to get it to the point where you're certain that it's good and ready to go on day one. And also, will there be? And I'm sure we'll talk about this through here. But will part of that be money for expenses for the business, you know, for a certain amount of months or years?
The bottom left again, 12-month operating capital. So we suggest that you have 12 months of monthly cash burn, which that's the next one we'll look at, to successfully keep your business open. Most businesses do not make money between, you know, 12 and 18 months is usually how long it takes. About the 18th, 19th, 20th month, that's when you should reasonably be expecting a profit. Depending on what industry you're in.
I will say, sorry to interrupt you right there, but I'm just going to mention real quick that throughout the years, there have been many times where we have had to sweat whether we would make payroll or not. We've had to juggle paying vendor bills. And none of those times are any fun whatsoever. They're very frustrating. They're very, sometimes demeaning. And this is something that, even though you said, you know, this will be one of those boring things where people's eyes glaze over, I'm going to tell everybody out there, perk up right now, because this money, this part of it where the money is concerned, is extremely important.
Well, it's arguably the most important. Yeah. If you don't have the right capital and cash to get going, you'll just fail. I mean, there's so many businesses that I've worked with who started out underfunded and they were trying to put stuff on credit cards or pay it off some other way. And it really, unless you're very lucky and quickly successful, it's a tough road to go down.
Ben Franklin said, "He that goes a borrowing goes a sorrowing."
There you go. So on the left hand side, we have our basic startup costs. The business documents are at the top. You need to be important to those, your LLC filing, operating agreements, state and federal licenses. And then make sure you think about any legal and professional help that you also need. The next kind of category on that left-hand side is the fixed assets, which we talk about in the middle. So fixed assets are things like your land, your building, your improvements to your building or lease, auto, equipment, and machinery. And you should list those all out. Like I have the example in green, I have kind of everything listed out that we would need. And that's just a very short, you know, list for an example. Your list could be just a couple items. If you're doing a service business, maybe you just need a computer or desk. Or if you're opening like a machine shop, you might need 800 different tools. And it's really important that you at least do your best to list them out. The more information that you can give yourself, the better job you'll end up being able to do.
So one thing that I did for myself, at least, you know, I want to say that there's a really offensive word on here to me, and that's the word planning. because I just usually don't do that. But one thing that I did was I did set up a sort of a spreadsheet where, a spreadsheet where I put all these costs in, and I set up some of the formulas so that the numbers would change with the inputs.
Yeah.
And I tried to be conservative with it, you know, so to say as negative as I could be, you know, while still maintaining optimism and trying to give myself a way to do the business. And that worked out pretty good, you know, where you can go up and down on certain numbers, right? You might think that you need something, but then if you really look at it and you say, well, this is less of a need, but more of a want. So if I really want to get started and, you know, get going, let me forego this expense for now. And I'll put that into year two or year three, you know? And I at least had that much discipline sometimes, you know, to be able to do that. Let's forego this and wait for it, and then we'll build up to it.
Yeah, you should definitely try to be a little aggressive when you're doing your startup cost, and then you'll probably get a little sticker shock when you see the actual total amount you need, and then you can work to scale it back. So on the far right-hand side, we have the building leasehold improvements. Again, you should list all that out, upgrades to electrical, plumbing, you know, a new HVAC. If you're renting a facility, whether you're renting or you buy a spot, it's almost never exactly how you need it. There's going to be some work that needs, even if it's just painting the walls. So that's another thing that we list out. And then we kind of get our startup costs on the left. But we need to work on our 12-month operating capital. And so if you move over to the monthly cash burn, so there's two parts of this. First is the monthly cash burn, and that is for your business, your fixed expenses. So we talked about fixed versus variable expenses in a previous step, and you should have done a little bit of that work during the feasibility study. In this case, we're going to revisit it and try to get a little more detailed with the more information we learned. So rent, utilities, administration, administrative salaries, monthly advertising budget, computers, dues, and subscription. These are all examples of fixed expenses. And a fixed expense, again, to kind of redefine that, means a cost that costs you money every month that doesn't change depending on how much money you're making. So it doesn't matter if you're making $100,000 in revenue or $10,000 in revenue, that cost is still the same. And another thing to throw in here too that we haven't quite landed on is debt service. So if you take a loan out for your business, you know, at whatever your startup cost is, or if you take a loan against some equipment, you're going to have to service that debt. So you're going to have to make that payment, the monthly principal and interest. So it's good to put whatever you think your debt service is in here. And we'll have some loan calculators and stuff like that available, so you can kind of figure that out. The last thing I want to mention on this one is the monthly cash burn is you should do a personal budget as well. If you can't afford to feed yourself and keep a roof over your head, you can't start your business. So you may be doing kind of a side business, so you don't need to worry about your personal budget because your day job takes care of that. But if you're jumping in with both feet, you got to pay attention to your personal budget as well.
Well, one thing about that that's really important is not only if you can't afford to pay yourself, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it, or you should, you know, figure out a way to recalculate your numbers so you can pay yourself. But you also want to be able to know that you can pay someone else to do the job that you're doing if you want the business to continue. So if you at some point don't want to actually do the work, then can you afford to hire somebody to do that work? And that's where that comes in. If you can't afford one employee, then you can't afford to replace yourself.
Yeah. I mean, people's budgets are typically different. So, but I understand what you're getting at with that. Yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, on your personal budget, make sure you get all the main things, you know, rent, utilities, subscriptions, food and gas. I highly recommend throwing in something for entertainment. You know, we talked a little bit about burnout and kind of just going crazy, spending all your time in your business. You should have a little bit set aside each month to do something you like, play golf for me, or see a movie, or just get out, have a beer at a bar. So don't try to completely cut out your entertainment expense. Otherwise, what are you working for? You're going to lose your mind. So we take that personal budget, put it into the monthly cash burn, and you see it's about $45,000. And then over back to the startup cost, if you can go back there, you'll see that we have that down there into the 12-month operating capital. So that monthly cash burn of about $45,000, it was on the monthly cash burn, 12 months of that equals the $272,000. So you have to include that into your startup costs because you need that money in the bank before you get going. And when you do funding requests or loan approvals, or you give a pitch deck to an investor, they want to see that. They want to see that 12-month cash burn. And they also want to see what you're going to be paying yourself. So if it's 5,600 like the last budget, or if it's $6,000 or $7,000, you know, it's okay to set some money aside for yourself.
So what is a, what would be a good rule of thumb to say paying yourself? Like I, like for example, in this, you know, the way you laid it out, it looks like 5,000 seems reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went to, if I went to a bank with this, with these numbers, and instead of 5,000, I was paying myself 20,000 a month, would I assume that that would be seen as pretty negative by whoever was trying to loan you money?
Asking for way too much is ridiculous. But if you have a personal budget and you're showing them, you know, this is my monthly expenditure and this is what I need, that's a little bit more reasonable. Even if you need $10,000, which some people, you know, if they have four kids and a house and stuff like that, they may need to enter $10,000 into their budget. You know, I was a little short on some of that, like childcare, $1,500, you know, that may be $5,000 a month. And so it's okay to have in there on your funding request that you're going to be paying yourself $200,000 a year or something like that. But you need to be able to back up why you're doing that. You can't just say, I'm going to pay myself.
Right. I guess that was my question. So as long as it's reasonably justifiable, does that show potential investors or bankers or whomever that you're responsible enough to be thinking about the fact that you're going to pay yourself and make sure that your family's taken care of and not have that stress on you?
Yeah, that's a reasonable thing. Even when you go to an investor, it's reasonable to say, I have to have, this is my minimum to live. And as long as it's a reasonable budget. Now, it also depends on what kind of industry you're in as well. Like if you, and what you did before. So like, you know, if you're starting a business and you live in a $900 a month apartment, and then all of a sudden you do a funding request in anticipation to go rent yourself a $10,000 a month house, that's ridiculous. You know, you need to have it at what your current level of living is. In these funding requests, you can't accelerate your living.
Now you're using the word funding request.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a specific term?
Well, it's a term. There's several types of funding that you can get. So, and we put together in the next phase, in this kind of put it all together phase at the very end, this next step is we include a funding request. And there's multiple types of funding requests. A bank one, you know, if you submit it to a bank, you say, I need $1 million in loans. They'll look at what assets you're buying and stuff like that. You can also submit a loan request to the SBA, which we'll show, and that's a really big proponent that you can do. The next one is grants. You can get grants and stuff like that. And then you can also just go to investors, you know, angel investors or, you know, I invest in businesses.
Yeah, I just wanted to clear up the term because I think a lot of us think of it in terms of a loan application.
Yeah. Well,
which is a request, of course.
When you go to an investor, it's the same thing. You know, you're asking for their money. So it's almost the same procedure as a bank, but without all the paperwork, usually they want to see different stuff. So.
Right. Okay. So we're just clear on the term funding request is synonymous with loan application in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And we talk a lot more about funding and different ways to tackle that in the next phase. So. Anyway, now that we're done with our startup costs, the next thing you want to do and your monthly cash burn, the next thing you want to do is the monthly pro forma. So this one's pretty big and aggressive. So just kind of go through it slowly, but you want to try to list out each individual line item of an expense that you might have. And there's going to be a little bit of guesswork in here, but this is basically how you can determine your profitability and when you expect to start churning a profit and making money and how much you're going to make. So the first kind of part of this is the revenue, and you want to estimate what your revenue is going to be. And you need to be somewhat conservative in how that's going to work. We talked a little bit in previous steps about pricing and potential revenue and maximum revenue. In this one, we kind of start with a base on month one of 10,000, and then we go up by 5,000 a month until we reach month six, and then it starts going up by about 10%. That's a pretty decent guesstimate. And a lot of this is going to be a guesstimate, but you want to, again, be conservative. So for our little fake business here, I roughly estimated that those were our revenue projections, our potential in sales. And you should get a little bit of bump at the beginning. Friends and family will come, people they'll talk to. So you should have a little bit of business in the beginning. And then once those kind of early adopters have found you and they've used your business, the revenue kind of projections start to slow a little bit per month. But anyway, this is how we projected that revenue. And again, a little bit of guesswork with your pricing model. Think about how many you think you reasonably will sell, or how much money you'll be able to make in the first month, and then keep it going for 24 full months. You want to do that for 2 years. And then, the next portion of it is our cost of goods sold. Our cost of goods sold should always be a percentage of our revenue, because those are direct variable expenses. And so if you're selling t-shirts for $4 or for $10 and you buy them for $4, your cost of goods sold is 40%. So you should just do it like that. We have like here purchases, raw materials, packaging and labels, all as a percentage of our sale price. So you should be able to kind of back that out and figure it out with a little bit of math. And there's a much longer explanation on the website that we'll go through.
Is there a rule of thumb for what typically an ideal cost of goods as a percentage of revenue should be?
It vastly depends on the industry. So like, you know, accounting, I don't have any cost of goods sold. A service company typically doesn't have any real cost of goods sold. I have a little bit of labor that I charge, but it's an admin labor because I pay them. Whether we're making money or not, they get a salary. So depending on the industry that you're in is where it is. Some manufacturing companies have, you know, big profit margins. Some have little. If we talk about things like shoe stores or t-shirt companies or grocery stores, razor thin margins. They might be at 70% cost of goods sold, particularly if you're at like a lesser chain, like a Walmart or something. You know, they tend to get their products priced pretty down, but those would have higher margins than, or higher costs of goods. If you're looking at something, I'm trying to think of a good example of like a high margin business, but it's escaping me at the moment.
Billiard supplies.
There you go. Yeah, billiard supplies. You know, things that get manufactured in China, they get over here. Maybe the landed cost is like $3, you know, and then people are selling them for $50. You know, that'd be a huge cost of good margin. So, and the actual margin that we want to call it is the gross profit margin. So we take our revenue minus cost of goods sold, and that's what we get gross profit. So that's sort of the definition of that word, gross profit. The next portion of it is all your expenses. And a lot of these are going to be the fixed expenses, your advertising budget, your rent, things like that. Other things you'll want to estimate. And you can see the ones that I've estimated are as a percentage. So, you know, like I have fuel at 5% of goods. If you're traveling around, you need to think about 5% of my sales is going to go to fuel. So, again, we'll have a thing that shows quite a bit better on how to kind of guesstimate these and little rules of thumb, but that's the basic 2-year pro forma. And we can see down here, we get to our net profit at the bottom. So gross profit minus total expenses equals the net profit. And so in this example, we start turning net profit by about month 7. So we're profitable in month 7. But one thing that's not included on your net income or your profit and loss is the debt service. So you got to think about your actual cash flow by adding into the debt service. So we have $29,000 a month of debt service in this example. We can see that even when we're breaking even after we pay our debt service, we're still losing money. So we need to pay attention to that.
So why is debt service not included in expenses?
So it's not actually an expense. The interest portion, it can be expensed, but loans don't go on your profit and loss statement or your pro forma. They are only on the balance sheet. So, and that's because loans, when you receive them, are not counted as income, and when you pay them back, are not counted as an expense.
Okay. But if we're doing, so you did put it on there as debt service underneath. Net profit, so that it's accounted for.
Obviously. Yeah, and you can see the bottom part is cash flow. There'll also be some other things that aren't included in cash flow. You may have some income from like investing activities and other things. Again, we talk a little bit more about the statement of cash flows and net income and stuff like that when we get to the next phase. We talk about accounting, which that one I'm really going to bore everybody when we get into that deal. But anyway, think about adding your debt service and think about anything else that's not typically included. income statement or a pro forma that would affect your cash flow. So that's the bottom line, is the cash flow. And if you scroll over to the next year, you can see that after we add back in our debt service, we start making money in month 20 of this one. And that's when we start turning a profit, an actual profit, a cash flow profit. Any questions on that or thoughts?
No, it makes perfect sense. And again, you know, this is the kind of thing that would have helped me so many times in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're passionate about something, at least be diligent enough to do this type of work, so that you don't turn your passion into a frustration. Yeah. Is what I would say.
And again, I already said this, but a lot of guesswork in here. So don't think that you have to be perfect. And then one of the great things that we do later in phase three is we do a continued financial analysis. We will refer back to this by plugging in the actual numbers from month one and month two and month three and see how kind of close we were, and then use that to update our projections.
I will say one thing I'd like to say to everybody is when you're doing these kind of things, and as I said, I created some spreadsheets of similar, you know, not to this detail, but basically, you know, trying to figure out what the revenue might be, what the profit margins might be, and so on. And there's a tendency, at least on my part, there's a tendency to be overly optimistic and plug in numbers that have a bigger net profit at the bottom line and sooner. And that's kind of a blind spot, because, you know, you're excited about getting out there and starting to sell and bringing in all these customers and everything. And it's important to think to yourself, to hold yourself back a little bit, be conservative with the numbers. Imagine the a few worst case scenarios, you know, like I'll just give you an example of a beautiful pool room in Las Vegas. Many, you know, 20, 25 years ago, this place was called the Lion's Den. It was going to be the most beautiful pool room in America, maybe the world. Their centerpiece table was a pool table that cost $25,000, and it had like golden carved lion heads for legs and everything, you know. I mean, it was the thing was done just immaculately. Then the way that that we hear the story, the fire inspector came in and basically said, don't know how this building was done, but everything's got to be ripped out and you got to put in a whole new system. And it was like another $200,000 expense or something like that that came with this giant building that they were putting this in.
Yeah.
And they never opened. They never recovered from that, because they ran out of money and couldn't find any more money to do this unexpected thing. And so many of us, like, we had been invited over there to see the place, you know, in the industry, and we were hyping it up and we were just so eager for it to open, and it just never got there. And the place stood there with $150,000 in tables, and fixtures and everything in there, more. The project cost millions, I think.
Yeah.
And it just never opened and faded away. And eventually it became a 99-cent store.
That's wild. Because that happens all the time, you know, those things. So when you're going through those startup costs, really think about everything that has to go in. And then oftentimes when I'm doing one myself, I add a little fuck up line. So I usually increase my total startup cost by about 20%, just to, in case I missed something or in case I screwed up or whatever, I try to add a little extra in there so I can pad my budget.
The bottom line there, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Two things just to mention on this. You'll notice that in this kind of reasonable one, and again, I made these numbers up, we didn't make money until about month 20. And like you said, you might want to be a little bit aggressive and show profit early and, you know, really try to make everything look, you know, sweeter than it actually is. Somebody who's really knows what they're talking about, has done businesses before, and is looking at your pro forma, who I've looked at hundreds of them, and you show me that you're going to start making a profit in month three and millions of dollars by month 10, I'm probably just going to say, okay, bud, good luck, and never talk to you again. So having a reasonable pro forma is completely acceptable. Showing that you're going to lose money basically in the first 2 years when you go to a bank or go to an SBA, that's an acceptable level of risk for them. They go, okay, he's going to start making real money in year 3 and 4 and 5. And then by year 10, he's going to make a bunch of money. So the last one we're going to look at is the yearly pro forma. And so you can see I transferred those numbers from year 1 and year 2. And then I just kind of increased things by year 3, 4, and 5, increasing yearly profit by about 30%. Now, that's a little aggressive, but I just wanted to show some numbers that these are increasing as we go. Every year, we make a little bit more money. If you scroll down, the other expenses start to go up too. You're going to want to think real carefully about things like rent, administrative salaries, your fixed expenses. They are fixed, but they're still going to increase. You know, you're going to need a bigger space. Maybe you're going to need more admin salaries. So think about those as they go up. And you can see that our kind of costs all go up. And then by the end, you know, year 10, we're making several million dollars. And even though we lost a bunch of money in the first couple of years, we eventually got to success. And so that's what this kind of planning is and project.
It all makes perfect sense to me. And starting businesses from here on out, that's how we're going to do it.
You know? Yeah.
But there's a lot of people, you know, that will tell stories like I have to tell about winging it and going to trade shows with, you know, no money, you know, barely being able to pay the booth space. Getting there, I just had this conversation with Chandler this morning. I spent a whole year and $40,000 developing a website that was geared for dealers where they could, it was ahead of its time. It was literally a notepad. You know, I've told you the story about this and I was so proud of it, and it worked. It really, truly worked. It was great. It was a way for dealers to be able to easily find the products, add them to their notepad, see all their discounts, get out to the trade show. I had paid for the internet drop. So this was back in the early 2000s. They basically drop an internet line down to your booth. And so I had a little router, right? And I hooked up the router so I could hook up 4 computers to it. And then each one would be like a terminal so people could try it out. Somebody from the trade show shows up and wants $1,200 more, or they're gonna pull the line because it's only for one computer to be hooked up to the internet.
Yeah.
And no amount of me explaining about how little bandwidth this is, it's not that, you know, they weren't having it. They didn't understand. All they saw was units. And I had to go basically walk around and beg my friends in the industry. And one of them wrote me a check for $1,200 to give to the thing. And we would have still survived that show. But that very same show, for example, I ran out of money on my credit card to pay the hotel bill, and my parents put up for what was a bed and breakfast, but it was long before Airbnb. So we all moved over to a little bed and breakfast and doubled up in the rooms there.
Yeah.
But had they not been there, had my friend not done that with the $1,200, I would have been really stuck. So, you know, while these stories about winging it and, you know, heading out, you know, into the great beyond with, you know, with a few dollars and a prayer to make your way are very entertaining and very sexy. It's much sexier to plan this stuff out and just get your ducks in a row, make sure you can afford to do what you want to do and give that your full attention and not be worried about whether you're going to be able to pay the hotel bill or pay, you know. And we like the romantic stories, you know, where somebody says, you know, I started this in my garage, which, by the way, that's not a big deal, starting something in your garage, right?
It's completely acceptable.
But every entrepreneur has got some kind of story, you know, that makes it seem like they just dove off a cliff with no glider and magically flew. But I would submit to people that a lot of those guys, a lot more than that, the ones that succeeded to tell the story, that lived to tell the tale, a lot more than that died on the rocks, you know?
Oh, way more. Way, there's way more failed business dreams and businesses than there are successful ones in the world.
And a lot of the guys that I know that are successful, solidly successful, they're not flashy. They're not out there, you know, when we sit down and talk, they talk about how they planned it out and how they did a lot of this, you know, and how they built it slowly.
Well, and you almost inevitably find in all of those people, there'll be at least one story where they jumped into a plan, not without a plan, and it didn't work.
Right.
Yeah, we have one, you know, where we jumped into that website design and it didn't take off at all. You can do it. You can just jump in and not plan and not do any of this if you want. But I guarantee you, whether you're successful or not, it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you more money than you wanted. Even if it's, I just didn't plan and I had to take an extra loan or had to take an extra, put something on a credit card and the interest is going to eat you up, you know. It's just going to cost money if you don't plan properly.
You want to hear how bad this story was? Listen, I'm not even finished telling it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. It wasn't that. I hadn't thought about telling this part, but I'm going to go ahead and tell it anyway. So the trade show's in New Orleans. I live in Colorado, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't even have a trailer. I bought a trailer at the flea market off of somebody that was literally the back half of a 1950s milk van or something, right?
Nice.
This thing had like it was the most gypsy thing you could imagine.
Definitely not street legal.
Right? Yeah, probably not, because it had like plywood doors on the back door that were held together by a Home Depot latch.
Yeah.
And we don't even get out of Colorado and one of the tires blows on this thing and we are out in the middle of nowhere, Colorado. Oh, I have to drive
the flat part of Colorado out of I-70.
Yeah. And I end up having to drive, unhook the trailer on the side of the road, drive like 15 miles off the highway to get to the nearest town. Right. And when I get there, it's literally like almost like a ghost town, one old service station, right? And then I don't even know if it was open, but there was a phone number. Get a hold of the guy, he comes out to take a look at it, and he's like, he literally says, I haven't seen this tire and rim since the 50s.
Yeah. Did he have something for you though?
No.
Oh no.
He had to order in a new axle and everything. So get this. And I got, when I said I had no money, I mean no money, right? So my girlfriend calls her mom, right, to get a credit card number. We have to drive 50 miles back now on the highway to go to find a U-Haul place, bring the U-Haul, unload everything, hook it all up, right? Keep on going to New Orleans. So I don't even get out of Colorado. I'm already in debt to my girlfriend's mom for this adventure, you know? And that's how it went, you know? And that's... You know how they say that arguing over money is one of the major causes of divorce? Well, that girlfriend who I eventually married, you know, was that wasn't a very good introduction, you know, to her parents to have to borrow money from them, you know, to do this business that they know nothing about.
So after you've kind of done these pro formas, it's a good idea to revisit your break-even point. We talked about that a little bit in the feasibility study. Now you really want to figure out your target. So you should have all your numbers and you should be able to figure out, I need to do exactly, you know, X amount of business in order to break even. And that's about it for this kind of financial planning. It's a lot, to be honest with you, to kind of put it all together. And if it's your first time doing it, it's really a headache. But just kind of go slow month by month, and then that should be pretty easy to then translate into your year-by-year pro formas. I think that's about it for me. This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.
Why does it sound?